Yep.
I'd like to call this meeting to order, Overton Power District, at the Mesquite office. I'm sorry, I read something else. The Mesquite office, February 21st at 3 p.m. Do we have any public comment? Hearing no comments or people identifying, we'll go to C, acceptance of the agenda for possible action.
I move we accept the agenda.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the agenda for today's meeting. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Item D, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting held January 17th, 2024. Do I hear a motion for approval?
Second.
Is that Dale and Mike?
It was Dale and Mike. It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting held January 17th, 2024. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair's report, I have nothing to report. I don't think. Attorney's report.
I have nothing to report at this time unless anyone has any questions for counsel.
Hearing no questions, we'll go on to item G, manager's reports.
Okay, Scott, if you would lead off, please.
My pleasure. Thank you, Stephen. All right, we're going to roll into the cybersecurity report. Starting fresh on a new year. Cybersecurity training for the month of January, we come in at 100%. Internal phishing results were really bad in January. We had 3, which tops last year's high record.
Different tactics or all the same?
Different emails? Users.
But all the same email?
Same types of email. So this is two of them right here. So there was an email about an anomalous network activity somebody was curious about. We did a benefits survey. Somebody wanted to answer the survey, so they clicked on those links. Those are internal, so our system did send those out. And the last one, some PTO changes. Someone clicked on the link, unfortunately. So for the rest of the year, we're going to try to beat that number right there and just get to zero, because it really does pose a major issue if they're clicking on actual emails. I mean, and you have to assume that some of that is happening. We just haven't seen any bad stuff come through our firewall or anything like that. So
is it if they click on a link in the email, or if it's like in the list of emails and they click on it?
They have to click on that link that's inside the email. They can open it. It can be on their screen. But as soon as they click that link, they go into clicker's prison, is what we call it. They get more training.
Maybe you guys are just getting better at, being deceived.
Well, they do look like they could deceive you. They look really good. But there are things that we don't show here. Like when I do a screen print of this, it says HR at OPD5, but on the actual email, it says no before. So there's just obvious clues that they could look at and tell that that's not a real email. 39,000 total email for the month of January. 2,000 of those were spam. That's firewall blocks by country. Server system uptime setting another record, 100%. Data backup and restore was at 100% for the month of January. I'm still tracking the eISACs. I'm seeing a lot of stuff, and I think Kevin's probably tracking these that more relate to substation. I track it for the IT cyber-related threats, but there are, just to see what the trends are happening out there, there's some substation trends, like theft of copper, theft from electric substation that are maybe a little bit more this month, but I'm sure SubOps is tracking those.
With metal prices going up, do you guys have any theft of that?
Has there been theft of anything at this point? No, I don't think so. Okay. Well, that's the end of my presentation. Any questions?
Spectacular.
Okay, Aaron. Aaron's going to give us a water report.
Okay, this is the best report ever. Even Randall's going to like it this time. Okay. So I kind of changed this up a little bit. This is, the colored areas are the significant areas only. Normally, like I show a graph that has everywhere, but those are the mountain ranges, and those are the areas that kind of provide the majority of the water for us. So October to January was kind of dry. It wasn't really wet. But I'll show on this next chart. Sorry.
Down to forward.
Down.
Yeah.
There we go. Perfect. Thank you. So February has been really, really wet, extremely wet. Some places are 200% of normal. So
is that percentage of per overall pack or just
that's just February. Just February. So I'll show overall pack here in the next slide. So February has been really, really wet. And then further in the slides, they are predicting a really wet March. So we're on the upward trend. So here is this is the upper Colorado River basin. This is like 130 snowtell sites. Those are the sites that are up in the mountains, and they track all this information. So you can see the black line is 2024. We've been below average almost the entire year, but because that really wet February, it kind of boosted us up. And right now, it's kind of hard to see in the upper left-hand quarter. We're 102% of average. So we're just about average, which is a good sign, and things are kind of are trending upward.
Here, on that last one, sorry. The green line, was that last year?
Yes. Thank you. So the average line is the one that we're on. The green one is 2023. I included that one. So 2023 was really, really wet. It was like an extremely wet year for us. So we're, I don't know, it looks like about 3 or 4 inches of snow water equivalent below what we were in 2023. But we're trending in the right direction, and it looks like it's going to keep going up. So we're in a good shape. So this is all of the snowtell sites. This is 104 sites, and this includes a lot of the upper Colorado River Basin and then the lower as well. So this is everything that you would see above Lake Powell. So it's right, the blue line is 2024, 2023 is the green line. So we're right at average. We're right where we should be, which is where we need to be. You can see the median peak is like 15 inches, and we're right about 12. So we're not that far off the median peak. So these are the last few months are like the kind of crucial months of continuation for our snowpack. So here's the Lake Powell elevation. It's gone down 10 feet from the high of this year, which is not bad. Like I think the total, we went from 3520 up to 3565-ish or somewhere around.
I think we're about 3570,
so,
right?
Yeah. It was, 3570. So we went up 50 plus feet for the year. We've only gone down 10. And here's Lake Mead. So Lake Mead's gone up 28 feet from a year ago today, so it's much, much higher, and it's continuing to go up because the flow has been really good this winter. All right, so here's the 8 to 14 day precip outlook. So we've had a pretty good February already. It looks like it's going to be a continuation of like even more moisture for February, which is good. And then here is the March outlook. And they're predicting above average March for Colorado. And then long term, March, April, May equal chances. What equal chances means is you flip a coin and that's your rate. It's 50-50. And then here is the El Nino, La Nina kind of outlook. The El Nino is gone, or not gone, but it's on its way out. And so the models are kind of predicting, if you see those are a lot of lines, but those are all of the average is the thick green line that's kind of in the middle there. That's the average of the models. And so they're predicting by next year a La Nina conditions, which it just really depends on kind of what happens. Sometimes you can get a really wet year from a La Nina, sometimes you can get really dry years. So it does influence our weather significantly. And that's all I've got. Any questions?
Okay, thank you, Aaron.
No.
Oh, Randall, you're next.
Okay. Last month I reported that someone was having issues on the RG number 230 line to get started. They've since resolved the right-of-way issues. They started grading roads into their pole sites. But their schedule doesn't show them being finished until May of this year. Because of their schedule, we're not going to be able to finish the ring bus project until this next fall, until October, November of this year. Our loads will be in the position where we'll be able to take out and just be able to cut over the ring bus into the existing bays. The Tortoise, the 138 line, we have received all of the material lists for the long lead items, and those are going out to bid this week. I should be able to report next month, hopefully, that we've received those bids, and we'll have an idea of how long it's going to take to get those materials, and then we can set the schedule for the build-out of the line.
What are some of the long lead items?
Insulators. That's probably the longest lead item we have on the list. We have a bunch of conductor and OPGW, but that in the past hasn't been as long as insulators. And can you bring up the first slide? So we're starting to cut in access roads to our locations. And the person in greenish there is one of the tortoise herders that we have on the job. We're required to have tortoise monitors on our projects. Next slide. Raptor substation has been completely graded and finished. And the block company has started. Will start their footings this week, and they'll start laying block next week. And we hope to be done by the middle of next month with the wall. If by chance the grading, go to the next slide. If by chance the grading catches up to where we can do the retaining wall, we'll move the block guys over and start that retaining wall there on the left side along that fence. We have a fairly large retaining wall. We need to get that finished so that the rest of the grading can be completed there. So there might be a moving process with the block company. And then there's a REAP grant application that's an action item that I'll discuss later on today. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Randall. Corey.
Okay, so hookups, we're starting fresh in January. We had a total of 48 hookups for the month of January, 47 residential and one commercial. So we're starting out real strong the new year. So and in reality, this month already we've installed a lot of meters. So we're going to have another good month for February. So annual hookups were 48 with that total. You can see the 5-year total. Locates and inspections. So I added audits. So inspections are just when we go out and we check on contractors and they're putting pipe in the ground and we're checking panels before we seal them up and plug meters on. Those are inspections that we're doing. Audits are when we actually go out and check our system for maintenance. So we have in our construction maintenance plan, targets where we're trying to get to maintain our system, that it doesn't get too out of balance for us. And so system audits we've done in the month of January, we did 776 system audits, and that's a really good number for the trying to maintain that.
What would they be doing, actually?
So, open and transformers have a little external infrared camera. They can infrared conductors.
Seize the heat.
Open secondary vaults, so open primary vaults.
So, it's pretty much check our ongoing.
And we've had, in the month of January, we had pretty good success with finding some problems that that were able to repair before they became an outage. So,
is that like scheduled, like you go around, or is it kind of like I'm here, I'm going to check these, or
so,
those audits?
So yeah, it is scheduled. We're doing certain areas and trying to get those areas done, and it's on a 3-year or seven-year rotation is what it is, our target. So go through our whole system every 7 years with the audit to verify that everything is in tip-top shape.
If the crew has been working in an area in that vault or transformer, do they put down that they've inspected that, or does it come up again?
Generally. Okay, and then locates, 276 locates for the month of January, and 119 inspections. So outages for January, we had a total of 19 outages, 18 of those for maintenance, and one unscheduled or non-planned outage. Affected, out of all of those, affected 119 customers for 78 customer hours. Leaves us with our AC at 99.999%. So 9994 if you want to know the actual number. So our safety program for in January, we're at 6 years, 4 months, and 8 days with no lost time. We're doing great there. Our safety topic for January was emergency action plans and fire extinguishers.
Let me ask you, what does an emergency action plan, give us sort of an example, is it like how to evacuate this building, or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and there's a lot of pieces to that as well.
Sure.
We're working on also some active shooter.
What you would do in a case like that? Mm-hmm. So they have a plan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we haven't got anything defined on that quite yet, but that's in the works. For projects that we work on, so after safety meeting every month, we hold the department training and department meeting. And so in January, this is out to our coal yard in Overton, and so the guys in this training were learning to tie some ties that hold the conductor on insulators that rarely are used anymore. And so we want to teach the younger guys the kind of a lost art that now we're using what we call vice top insulators, that they actually clamp the conductor. There's no wrap locks anymore, rarely. And so we're teaching them how to apply wrap locks, how to do an aluminum tie, and how to do copper ties. They're all different types of ties that you would that would be very useful in a temporary outage situation, and it was a great event, and everybody participated very well. So this is a project in Overton that has been ongoing. We did some underground work off of Thomas Street by the middle school in Overton, and this was designed to try and drop some overhead conductor that went to the middle school. And so they're trying to dead-end all of these conductors. Everything was up pretty high, so they suspended the conductors down low so they could get a little bit of cleaner access to the upper conductors so they could dead-end. You see in the picture there to the right that that they had gotten that top one dead ended, and then went ahead and got the bottom one dead ended, and then that's just a clean shot of everything dead ended, and then ultimately, I guess I didn't include that one. There's a picture that actually shows that span. Oh yeah, that is it. The span on top is out going to the middle school. So that conductor was then dropped. And so the intent is that this whole those conductor going both directions there, this way and across the road to Benelli Street, will come out eventually. This was a Mesquite crew was working on Riverside Road, River Crossing. We've had, you can see a structure right down here in the bottom of the river has been threatened to be washed out for several years now. And so we had design engineering, outside external engineering firm, designed this structure to be able to span all the way across the river from one side to the other. And so that's what is taking place here, is they're actually getting that conductor prepped and pulled across the river all the way across.
Did Guy have to pony up some for that, or
a who? No. That's all on us. Mm-hmm. And so this is the structure that's down by the river as they laid it out so they could pull the conductors and keep it controlled as they pulled those new conductors in. And then this is just a shot of the puller as they get ready to pull conductor across. And this project's not complete yet, but they have all but one phase across the river. We'll actually run underground up these poles and then heat the outside phase up so that we can transfer a guy across the river to that new phase while we then pull in the last phase so that we can de-energize the one that we're pulling over the top of. So it's a pretty good project. So this was a training 2 weeks ago that we did at the Withamwack Valley Fire Department. We reached out to them. They were really happy and excited to receive some training. And one of the things that spurred this a little bit was there was an incident that happened along the boulevard. There was a car that had ran over the top of a transformer, and OPD personnel had a really hard time getting people to stay away and to stay out of the vehicles while it was sitting on the transformer. It could have been a really, really bad event. And so luckily we have our demo trailer that's complete, and so now we can go on the road and do a circuit. And Mohawk Valley Fire Department was our first stop, and we've reached out to Mesquite City, and they've been open to it as well. And so this is just some pictures of the demo, showing what can happen with the tree branches or palm fronds in the line as well. And then we also did, apologize for the picture, it's not a great one, but it's you can understand what's going on here. We actually did a pole top rescue with the fire department so they could get an understanding. There could be some discussion related to that as well, of our role and their role and how we can work together to accomplish that and collaborate. Overall, it was a great event and great presentation. My hat goes off to the crew that put that on and really did a bang up job and built some relationships with the fire department. And then finally, this was the whole crew that was present. So that's my report, unless you have any questions.
One comment, I'm really, really happy to see that. Working with the fire department on that.
Yeah, the feedback was very, very positive.
Oh, good.
On all sides.
Steve Nils said he was going to include that in his academy every time they hold an academy now.
Fabulous.
So I think that's a good idea. Thanks, Corey. Right. Kevin?
I'm going to come up to the front, too. I don't want to, get left behind. So Falcon Substation was energized February 6th. So, hooray, Falcon Sub's energized. You guys don't have to hear about it every board meeting. One of the key points of this substation is, so if you all notice, and you all have come back to me and said, we don't know what Dinosaur Sub is or Falcon Sub, so I'm going to show you where it's at. I don't know if that's good or bad that I do that. But you've got, this is the industrial area down here, okay, and the deep roots, and then this is Falcon Sub right here. Up here you got Pulte Homes, and then we've got a substation up here that feeds, right now, that substation feeds, and that's Dinosaur Substation. It feeds down, all the way down into here. So all of this, plus all of Pulte, is fed off of Dinosaur Sub. And then we have a line from Dinosaur Sub that comes through this sub and feeds Crown. So they're coming right now all the way up from that sub all the way down to here. We've also got a sub over here, Pulsifer Sub, and it feeds all of this industrial load right now. And then we've got another sub, this one up here, Painted Hills, and it feeds all the way down through here and picks up this. So with this substation, we're going to push Crown out of that substation until Raptor, which is here, it's going in here, Raptor, when it's done, Crown will be fed directly out of Raptor. But until then, we'll feed Crown out of here, and also we will push this load back over here and pick up a lot of the stuff that Dinosaur is feeding, so we'll push Dinosaur back in towards the Sun City area. And then out of there, we'll also push back this way into Painted Hills, so we'll take some load off Painted Hills. And then the circuit that is feeding the industrial load right now, we'll push it back into here, and also we'll push a circuit to feed this area. So Pulsifer Sub will have all of that capacity pushed back to it, and we'll push all of the, we'll keep pushing it that direction towards Mesquite. So we'll gain a lot of capacity back in a lot of these substations that were kind of, I wouldn't say overloaded, but we were hitting the top of where they should be. So we're going to kind of gain a little bit more capacity just from that one substation. We'll just kind of push everything back to where it should be. So, any questions?
What size did you put, a 10 or a 20 in there?
Put a 20. Yep.
Okay, when Raptor goes in and feeds Crown, then what do you do? Since you don't all longer have to feed it, right?
Yeah, but we still have a lot of load come that will come out of that substation still. You know, just Crown is going to be fed out of here plus back into here. We'll still push this substation back into this even more. Because we've got a lot of other substations that are still, like I say, they're right at their top. We don't like to run them at the top. We like to run them somewhere in the middle. That way it gives us switching capabilities. If something happens, we can move some load. We don't have to worry about overloading.
One of the problems that we have in this area is you can see all that open land. And along the road there, there's a lot of smaller entities that have moved in there that don't require a lot of extra power. But then you have somebody like Crown that comes in that demands a lot of capacity. We have to be real flexible in our planning so that we can allow for whatever comes in there. And we may, you know, if we get a lot more businesses the size of Crown that come in, we might end up adding another substation or two in that area based on how big they are.
Yeah.
So this is a good groundwork, what Kevin's doing, but it's not the final product yet.
Yeah, we still see a lot more capacity coming out of both of these subs when they're online, because this is all industrial area through here.
Yeah, all zone for that.
So you never know what's going to happen in the future. And you'll notice down here on this end of town, there's a lot of multifamily dwellings coming in, take a lot of power. So the goal is to make the substations that are down in that area capable of handling all that load. And that's what we're doing there. Any other questions? Metering projects. So the metering department's been busy. February and March, they're going to visit every inactive site that we have on our system. Because we have a lot of sites that were, you know, I've got a trailer here. I pull my trailer out. I disconnect service. They want to go into those services and look, make sure they're still inactive, disconnected, somebody hasn't jumped across them. So they're going to visit a lot of those. And their plan is to visit every inactive site on our system in February or March.
Do you find very many people jumping?
Not very often anymore. We used to find them in the past, but lately we haven't. But, they've been, so we bought a couple of socket-based test equipment, and you plug it into the socket base, put the meter back on, and then with that, it broadcasts back Wi-Fi to the truck with a laptop. And so they've been deploying that a lot and testing a lot of single-phase services with that. It's been really helpful. And they've also been teaming up with the engineering department. The engineering department does some studies. I'm not sure what ones they've been doing, but they'll take this meter and plug it on the end of the line, and they'll check voltages throughout the day, record those voltages. And then when they do their studies, they can say, this is what our system says that it'll do. This is the actual, and they can compare them and make sure they're accurate and make adjustments if they're not. So, they've been visiting three-phase commercial projects, sites. During one of those visits, they found one of the instrument transformers was reading below what it should. And so they scheduled an outage, changed out those instrument transformers, and put it back online and save the money a little bit of company that way. Because now we're billing correctly instead of letting them have a little bit extra. So, let's see. 6917 breaker. We replaced this breaker. This breaker is up here. I say it's had some operational hiccups. That's probably being nice. And the reliability has been in question on this breaker. So we decided to change it out. It's a pretty critical breaker out there in the Moab area. It feeds.
You better change it out.
Yeah, it feeds a lot of. it feeds all of Glendale Moab, but basically this breaker does. So this old style breaker, it's an air compressor. It's got a big air compressor and pumps up to like 220, 240 pounds PSI. And that's what it uses to actuate this great big pendulum, swings up and sets a lock and has a big spring behind it. And that's what it uses to actuate. Well, that air, you can imagine that much air pressure, it's got to give. So we're always changing out pilot valves and hoses and all kinds of stuff. And then you use a compressor that much to build up air, and you get moisture. And that moisture gets into all of these seals and all of these little stainless steel parts, and it corrodes them. So they've been, you know, the breakers have been good themselves. They test out good, but the air part of it kind of takes a lot to keep them going. So the new breaker that we're using has a DC motor, and it winds up this big spring, and it uses that to actuate the breaker back and forth. It's quicker, it's a lot less maintenance, and it uses our 125 volts from DC from the batteries in the substation. So if we have a power outage, we still have those batteries that we can operate that breaker with. So maintenance is very minimal. Monthly inspections are very minimal. They've been very reliable breakers. So new breakers in service, been tested, and it's ready for use. This is that breaker right there. I thought that picture was cool. I wanted to use it. So that's the breaker they changed out. There's the new one. They're putting it in place there. This is the old breaker versus the new breaker.
No more outages out there.
Can't guarantee that. Sorry. So any questions on that? Okay. And then finally, congratulations, Shane Robinson. We've had a long time vacancy in our organizational chart for our substation department, and we awarded that to Shane Robinson. So he is now our foreman. Any questions?
Is that him?
That's my little puppy dog. She loves the river.
Okay, thanks, okay. Kevin. Stephen, do you want to pull up my, I've just got a couple of things there in my folder. So I've had a real busy month. I've got a few things to report to you. First of all, Senator Scott Hammond, he is a state senator, was actually representing a district in Las Vegas. He was going to be termed out this next election, so he vacated his seat and he took a new position in the governor's office. It's for the governor's director of workforce innovation. Didn't even know we had one of those. But I've been in contact with Scott Hammond a few times. We visited. He was curious about how we train our people. How do we get accountants? How do we get linemen? How do we get engineers? Wanted to know what we're required for training and how we get people. And he wants to work with a number of people to see if we can develop some of those training capabilities within Nevada. So I'll continue to meet with Scott, and we'll talk about those things. And that's turned into be an interesting partnership. I also attended the Nevada Legislature's Growth and Infrastructure Interim Committee meeting. That's a lot of words there. Basically, what it is, this is the Growth and Infrastructure Committee from the state legislature, and they bring the House members and the senators together. And what they did is they called a meeting and they asked the PUC, NV Energy, Southwest Gas, they asked them to give presentations, and then they talked to them about rising rates in both natural gas and in the electric prices in Las Vegas. And then after they did that, they wanted to hear from Valley Electric Association and then NREA. And so we gave our presentation. It was interesting in a couple respects. We tried to show them the difference between what an investor-owned entity is and what we were. And I think when they see us side-by-side like that, it really gives them a better idea of what we are when we can explain how we operate and the way that we do things. And so it was really good. Good opportunity for us to be able to get before them, because we also go before these folks when the legislature's in session asking them to do different things for us. So it's helped us to foster that relationship a little bit. One of the interesting things that I heard NV Energy and Southwest Gas talk about, they said that in about April of 2023, they said natural gas prices peaked. And that ever since then, the natural gas prices have been coming down. And they expected through the end of this year for natural gas prices to fall. And I thought that was interesting, because I haven't seen that information. And I talked to Tenasca and to Morgan Stanley about that, and they said, we haven't seen that either. So I think there was probably a little self-preservation going on there when they did their presentation to the PUC to get the heat off them. But again, it was interesting to see how they operate, and it was interesting to hear what they were saying versus what we're hearing from the people that work in the market. We had an NREA meeting just last week. The PUC has opened a docket, and this docket was started because during the last legislative session, there was a law passed that Nevada has to join an energy market by the year 2030. And that means we either have to develop our own market, join a new market that's created, or we have to join CAISO. We don't want to join CAISO. But the problem is there's no other market being developed. SPP, the Southwest Power Pool, continues to move our direction. But so far, they've only moved as far as Utah, and they've just barely started moving into the eastern side of Arizona. So unless they really pick up the pace, our only option is going to be CAISO. Nevada is not big enough to create its own market. There's not enough customers. There's no generation. There's not enough transmission. So one of the interesting things about this is we put together a list of comments that we're submitting into this docket on questions that we want to see answered as they talk about this. So we put together about 25 questions to be asked. And we had APCO and Deseret join us on the call so that they could provide some of their expertise since they work in the market. And I asked Patrick Ledger, the CEO from from APCO. I said, you know, I said, Patrick, from my experience, and we're not directly in the market, I said, from what I see there, you know, the market talks about efficiency and lower costs and all these things. We just haven't seen it on our level. Have you seen that in your work? And he says, the only people I see that are making money in these markets are the markets themselves. And so it's good for CAISO when people join. They make money, but none of the participants make money unless they have a lot of transmission and generation. Everybody else that joins just to use those pays more is what happens. And so it's not best for What's Nevada. We're going to try and have ourselves carved out of this market, but it'll still be all around us. It'll still affect us even if we're not forced to join.
Is there any momentum to postpone or delay the 2030 requirement?
No. The legislators, and I saw this at this Growth and Infrastructure Committee, they are still convinced that a market and renewable energy like solar is going to save Nevada.
Does Nevada need saving?
Pardon me?
Does Nevada need saving?
Yes. Yes, we do, because we don't have our own generation in state. We rely on Utah and Arizona to provide some of the generation that we have, because all we have is solar. All of the coal, except for one plant, has been taken out. We do have a few natural gas sites, but even those are limited, and they're a far cry from meeting the needs of the entire state of Nevada. So we have to rely on imports from neighboring states. California is also relying on those imports from neighboring states, and so we compete with Nevada and Oregon and Washington for those resources, and that's why the prices keep going up and up and up. So that's the problem. Last meeting I told you about the Hydro Act. That's the act that we've asked Senator Kelly from Arizona and Representative Celeste Molloy from Utah to sponsor in the Federal House and Senate. I have asked Susie Lee, who is one of our legislators. She sits on the House Natural Resources and Water Committee. I asked her to co-sponsor that bill for us to join. That way we would have what we're looking for is in the Senate and the House, people from the upper basin, lower basin, Democrat and Republican to all sponsor this. She was real responsive at first on that request to sponsor this. But I think as she went along, I think she questioned the validity of this being passed. And I think she's backed off co-sponsoring this because she doesn't see that it has a way going forward. Part of that reason is not because of the bill. Part of that reason is because of what's going on in Congress. There's just not going to be much that gets passed this year. So I don't know that we're going to be able to get her to co-sponsor for us. I sat in on a CFC economic forum. We have a couple of slides here from that economic forum. CFC provides quarterly economic updates, and it was really interesting because if you listen to the news on TV, they keep talking about 6 rate cuts happening this year, and you know, and all these things, the economy coming back, and the people that you listen to that really know the market say that's not going to happen, and this information bears it out. If you look at the dollar index is about right where it was a year ago. You can see the markets, the equities have jumped up dramatically. You can see interest rates have done nothing but go up, except for the 2-year treasury made a slight dip. That's about it. Everything else is going up, anticipating that rates are not going to be cut. And then you see the economic indicators, GDP is going down. That would favor a rate cut. But then you look at the other things, the employment number, the unemployment rate, the core CPI, the confidence numbers, those all indicate a raise in rates, not a cut. And then you look at the commodity prices. You can see what's going on there, that gold has gone up, anticipating continued inflation. Same with some of the other commodities. And then another, as you're looking under the industrial tab there, you can see natural gas prices. They show that they're up, but when I looked at those just this week, they were under $2. So natural gas prices have made a dip, and we'll, I can't remember if I have a slide for that or not, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So anyway, the people at CFC say that the only rate cuts they see is perhaps three in the latter half of the year. They don't see six rate cuts having any prayer of happening. So let's go to our next. Oh, I wanted to talk about core inflation, headline inflation and core inflation. So you've seen those come down, but you can also see they've started to plateau in that middle graph there on the right. And the headline CPI is the blue line, and core inflation is the brownish colored line. And the difference in between those is energy and housing is taken out of regular CPI to get the core CPI. So if it weren't for housing, that core CPI would actually be lower because energy prices lately have been dipping down. So that was an interesting thing. Let's go to the next slide, Stephen.
In the commodities right there, you have natural gas has came down pretty significantly.
Oh, yeah, it did.
Last year.
Yeah.
Have you noticed, has that been a gradual trend down, or is that happening?
No, it gradually trended down, but it hovered around between about 2.25 and about 2.75 for about the last 5 to 6 months, and it's only come down since the first of the year. Yeah. So what we're hoping is this is a really good time to negotiate our contract, and that's what we're pushing for. So, great question. Thank you. Let's go to the next one. Let's go to the other one first. So, CFC said these are the scenarios they see for Federal Reserve rate cuts. And so they built this matrix, and we just talked about how core CPI has tended to kind of flatten out and plateau. And it has gradually gone down to about the 3.9% level, but it's hanging at that area. The economy is continuing to grow at or above, so that indicates, according to their metrics, later, slower rate cuts. And so they said they don't anticipate any aggressive rate cuts until you see these other things met on this metric. So that was a real good thing to have handy. We can kind of follow along with how that should work. Now let's go to the next one, Stephen. So they said that other than rates staying high, this is the threats that they see to the economy in the coming year. The primary threat is to the banking industry. And you can see the scenarios there in the kind of brownish or orangish type lettering is the problem. And then underneath it tells you who's at risk if those problems occur. But some of those problems are going to occur, and it's going to affect the banks. So that's what they see going forward during the rest of this year.
How does it show who's affected?
So, for example, if you go to the far right, it says exposure to commercial real estate.
Yes.
If commercial real estate tanks, then the higher risk is to regional, community, and small banks. A lot of times, banks that are in our communities. Yeah. Okay, Stephen, thank you. That's the last of those, so thank you. I just wanted to give you a little bit of an update on CRETA. We had Congresswoman Celeste Malloy who joined us. I mentioned her. She's sponsoring the Hydro Act, and she is very excited to do that and is going to work hard to do that. We hope that she's able to get some success, and hopefully Susie Lee will join her. One of the interesting things that we heard at CRETA is we had somebody from the Department of Homeland Security that came and talked to us, and they gave us a presentation of about an hour and a half of just slide after slide of just brutal data, things about droughts and floods and earthquakes and the earth sinking and and more tornadoes and storms. And by the time we got through talking about this, we learned that if you have a headache or a dog bite or if you cross a bump in a road, all of it's caused by climate change in some way.
We're all doomed.
And I'm serious. That was the crux, that climate change affects every aspect of our lives. That was the government's presentation there. So it's very interesting. We also heard a legislative report at the CRETA meeting. Our lobbyists in Washington, D.C. said that there's only a couple of vehicles that we can attach our Hydro Act to if it's going to pass. One is the Farm Bill, and then there's some other things where there's a what's called WERDA. It's a water bill that goes through California that sometimes energy things get attached to. Those are our two vehicles that we're aiming for to get attachments to. But there is a slim chance of much getting through Congress this year, is his prediction. So it's going to be an interesting year. At our NREA meetings, we've been talking about forming a joint action agency. I've been working with Colorado River Commission, and I've been working with somebody at Valley Electric Association. And what we're trying to do is at the start of this talk, when we were talking about markets, we have a lack of generation, we have a lack of transmission. And so I've been talking with CRC and Valley Electric to see if there's something that we can do to form a joint action agency that us smaller utilities can band together and do some generation projects or some transmission projects together. And so we held a meeting 2 weeks ago and talked, and we brought up some maps of southern Nevada, and there are some possibilities that we're going to talk. We have an NREA board meeting tomorrow, and we're going to talk about seeing if we can find some synergy amongst the NREA members where we could join just a couple of transmission systems. If we could link Valley with Lincoln and Lincoln with White Pine, we could have a transmission path from Meade all the way to Ely to Gonder Substation. So that's our focus, and we're going to work hard on seeing if we can make something happen. It's going to take a long time, but it's something that we're working on together, and hopefully we can make it happen. So we'll see how that talk goes. And then I feel like I'm talking 90 miles an hour. I appreciate your patience. My final topic is discussions with Tenaska and Morgan Stanley. We've been working with both sides diligently, talking every week about getting our contract wrapped up, getting some pricing. They're still both working on pricing for us. We've told them that we would like to have something done by our March board meeting. I think at this point it's going to be a miracle if we're done by the March board meeting. But I can see us perhaps having a special board meeting the last week of March to maybe get something approved. So we're going to try and have everything done by the board meeting, but we may have to fall back to a special board meeting the last part of March to get a new contract approved.
What's the hang-up there?
So there's a couple of things. First of all, we have a number of solar projects between Glendale and Las Vegas that have come online that want power, and they have been slow to provide information for them, so we've kicked them out of the queue, and we're going to make them be under special contracts. So we've solved that problem. The other problem is just they've been waiting. I've told them what we want to do and where we want to be, and they're watching the market trying to get the very best price because they know they're competing against each other. So when they get the best price they can, they're going to send us some numbers.
Have they dipped at all because of the last month?
Yes, they have. They have. So I think that they both want our contract. They're both working hard to get it, and we'll see what happens. In fact, we had one of our conversations was with, you know, the whole team from Morgan Stanley in Vancouver and in New York, and then in Tenaska we had a face-to-face meeting with them where one of their top men came from Dallas. Both of them came from Dallas to talk to us, meet face-to-face. They said they wanted to get comfortable with us and wanted to know if they could come talk to the board at some point. And we told them, yeah, if you give us some great prices, you can come talk to our board.
Sharpen your pencil, boys.
And but they said they're excited to do that and want to do that. So we'll see what happens. So that's my report, unless you have any questions for me.
What kind of company is that?
Tenasca. So they are a national market provider, like Morgan Stanley is. One of the advantages that they have is they currently work with the Colorado River Commission in Las Vegas to do, they backfill their contracts. They also are the power provider for 14 704B customers in Nevada, 11 in Las Vegas and 3 in Reno, where these are the entities that have left NV Energy and went out on their own, and they provide power for all 14 of those entities. So they know the markets very well and know the transmission system very well. They know NV Energy very well.
Thank you.
Is there any updates on the solar project out in Sandhill there?
What do you guys, have
you heard anything?
Well, we've heard little things. Anything you
want
to share?
Anything happening, but...
Well, they're not moving dirt yet. We understand that they've procured some of their materials. We also understand that they are working with some entities to expand the site here and do an additional site out to the east of, out to the west of us in Lincoln County, and that they're trying to attract maybe some larger business to come in with them, especially on the Coyote Springs side.
They're going to have our power for us, don't we need it?
To be honest with you, they tell us they're going to be done in a year, but the fact that they haven't moved dirt yet makes me really nervous.
They have stuck with it March of 2025. They're going to be online.
They got deep enough pockets to...
They're meeting with a lot of contractors right now, fencing contractors and such, that they're... in the middle of contracting them right now, so they're starting. Yeah,
you know the way they've developed these new solar projects though, and you see this in the one that they did out by the smoke shop on the way to Las Vegas. What they do is they bring in a bulldozer that they don't dig and pour concrete anymore. They bring in a bulldozer that drives a pier in, and they just drive a pier with the bulldozer, and then they come in and they hang the steel on it, and then they attach the panels. They can do it pretty darn fast.
It goes up fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, at the one by the smoke shop, they didn't even grade it. They just did it right on native.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they even have to have turtle monitoring on the
reservation's on their own, right, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Lisa.
Is it my turn?
It's your turn finally. Thank Sorry. You. That was a lengthy one.
Our operating revenue for January on the far right side you can see was $4,106,000. Our cost of purchased power on line number 3 was $2,168,000, giving us a total cost of electric service on line number 20 of $3,592,000. On line number 22, it's not highlighted, I apologize. That is the interest that we receive for $135,000 on our investments, giving us a total margins of $649,511 for the month. On the asset side of our balance sheet, you can see that our net utility plant and service is now valued at $119 million. We have investments in associated organizations, cash, investments, and inventory, giving us a total asset value of $175,383,000. On the right-hand side, or our liability side, you can see that our total margins and equities is now at $116 million. We have long-term debt, which we will give you a breakdown of in a few minutes, accounts payable, and again, the total liabilities is that $175
million. I have a question.
Okay.
On that sheet. Sheet number 5, the total utility plan. Does that change? I mean, we don't see what the other is. I mean, I don't know what last month or last year was, mm-hmm. and yet I see that and I go,
So what I'll do is next month in our meeting, I keep a spreadsheet where I track those year to year.
Good.
I will bring that and I'll show it to you.
Okay. So one of the other things that we had talked about doing, because this year is going to be so dynamic with our power cost changes, that we would quarterly do a refresh of our budget. And this is one of the things that we talk about, is how much plant did we add, how much did we close to plant. So if you look at line number two is construction work in progress. So right now we have $12.5 million in construction going. As those close, as those jobs are completed, we then move those down one line to the total utility plant on line number three. And so we are closing jobs and adding to our total value of plant. But I'll when I do those quarterly updates, we'll talk about that and give you a review of what jobs have closed.
Yeah, I've seen the number, but I don't know what the number means.
Yeah, and when the numbers are large like that, it's easy to get lost in that.
Sure.
Okay, here's a breakdown of our cash. You can see that at the end of the month, we had $4.1 million in our bank accounts. At the bottom of the page, you can see that our investments with Morton Assets is now at $34.3 million, and our Goldman Sachs is at $2.57. You can see that we had an increase in our checking account by about $2 million, and our Goldman Sachs was reduced. That's just because it's the first of the year. We had bills that were coming in, and so we moved some of that money to cover that. As those balances increase in February and March, we'll move back money back into that investment account. Goldman Sachs is currently paying, as of the end of the month, at 5.239%. Our Morton Assets, I'm going to skip. This is the breakdown of security types and the duration. Our Morton Assets, the average return on that is 4.42. We closed the month with 18,319 customers. Our ratios for modified debt service coverage with estimates for the remaining 11 months is 2.43. We currently have 66.25% as an equity as a percentage of our assets, and our tier is at 7.17. We received 81 connect fees for $32,448. We currently have 15 billing arrangements for $2,846. And our roundup programs are going strong for both schools. Here is a breakdown of that long-term debt. We will have a quarterly payment that is due in March, and that payment will be paid in full and on time. Here's a breakdown of our revenue by customer class. If I increase that, you can see at the bottom that our monthly cost of power for January is at 5.4, our monthly revenue is at 10.8, and our 2024 average cost is, of course, the 5.4. And that concludes my presentation, unless you guys have any questions for me.
Has the investment strategy been changing? It seems like everybody was forecasting interest rates to drop. I think our Gold Sachs, whatever, is getting 5.29. Wish all our money was in that instead of averaged out and all that other stuff.
Yeah, that offers us such little protection, because then when the rates go down, we're not guaranteed that rate. I'm going to go back to this page, though, Bob, and show you. One of the strategies that's changed, and you see this in for the last number of months, the very first column is the shortest duration. We have $15.2 million in that shortest duration. But the reason that is so much is because some of the bonds, the government bonds that we do have, that U.S. government that's 21.8%, that is on a rate that when those rates go up, we get the higher rate. We're then locked at the higher rate. So that fluctuates. So as a result of that, that's reported as a short-term investment. We still have investments that are going all the way out past 3 years, and we want to stagger some of that. But we have a good portion of that is in those longer U.S. government bonds. But because the rate does fluctuate and it only goes up, it doesn't, when it drops, it doesn't go back down. Then that's why we have it in that short. So that is a little bit deceiving when you're looking at what is our strategy, because those are locked into longer rates. But because of the way that they report, I show you them in that that first column.
Do you feel like that strategy is changing at all, or are investors feeling pretty secure with what they got going on?
I don't see a major change. We had a call scheduled with them for the 29th. to go over our next quarter's strategy. So I'll report that to you for the March meeting.
So one of the things that's in play here too is you remember in November as we went through our capital projects, we have $23 million of capital projects scheduled for this year. So some of that money needs to, a good portion of that money needs to stay in the shorter term so that we can take it out and apply it to those projects unless we see those getting pushed out further.
And one of the reasons that we try to really optimize the Goldman is because it's one vehicle that we have that as long as we request our money before 11 a.m. Pacific time, we can have it by 2 p.m. Pacific time. So same day turnover. So we try to transfer back and forth between there. I try to leave as much as I possibly can, but we want to make sure that we can clear all the checks as well.
All right. I've got one more question. As the we have a forecast margins, and we, you know, try to project that. Our winter was, I think, fairly mild. How did we do on our forecast? That mild winter, are we going to make our margin projections? Are we going to be under those?
Well, for January, we were already significantly more. Our expenses were up, but we had estimated for a margin of $200,000, and we were just over $600,000. Part of that, a good portion of that was power cost. We're seeing, because of all of the rain that Aaron reported on, we're getting a lot of hydro. And so, in fact, we just got, just this week, we were in discussions with Colorado River because they have additional layoff that we were able to secure. So we're seeing good water flow, and we're taking advantage of that now so that when we don't have it, we make up for some of those margins.
Okay. That's good.
I did see a projection that the even 5-year projection of interest, they'll only pay 5.1% on the bonds. Mm-hmm. So going out further doesn't guarantee you a higher rate because we're getting that kind of money right now on shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I try to monitor the CDs too, and what we see is the sweet spot appears to be 17 months to 24 months is the highest. Yeah, is the highest.
Yeah, the banks and the credit unions, they know that rates are going to drop, so they're starting to plug those into their rates as well. So yeah.
Item H, review and possible approval of a USDA grant offer to provide matching funds for a battery storage project.
So Randall and his team has worked really hard on this. So Randall, why don't you tell them the good news?
I am. I have some really good news to share. I have some good pros, and I have some cons for you guys to consider before we finish this. Anyway, this is the first time in our realm of grants that they offered a 50-50 match. It's usually 25 or 30%. So really, the incentive there to go after the grant was there. So we applied for the grant, and we've been offered the grant. Now, we don't have to accept it until next month. We have until the 20th of March to decide whether we want it or not. So let me tell you some comps and pros first. The pros are first. So $1 million isn't really $1 million. And let me tell you why. Because we can offset, if we decide to deploy the batteries every day for an hour, 1 megawatt, we can offset energy costs, which would amount to about $380,000 over 13 years. So these batteries, well, I'm going to get to a con, but these batteries only last 13 years. Another thing we can offset is 1 megawatt of transmission costs monthly, and that equates out to about $390,000 over 13 years. So there's some cost savings that we can apply to that $1 million, which brings it down in more of the $300,000 or $400,000 range. Okay, and we also get to test these batteries over 13 years to see how they work and how we can implement them into our system. Are there any questions on the pros? Those sound good, don't they? Okay.
Are they going to be maintenance free? How busy is Kevin going to be keeping them going?
They are basically maintenance free. They come in their own container, and that's where we're going to get to the con.
And then the switching and all that?
The switching comes with, they come with software, and we'll have to learn how to do the switching and how we just, depending on how we decide to deploy the batteries.
Is it just like the ones that regard or the plug-in?
Yeah, plug-and-play, basically, yes. The con is, in 13 years, we have to get rid of them somewhere. We'll have a Con-X full of batteries that we can't use. Another con is, are they going to last 13 years? That's what the manufacturers say, but have they used one for 13 years? Probably not, the type we're going to go with. And also, some of the other potential cons are the $300,000. Could that be used for something better over this time? Do we have other projects that we could put $300,000 to? So that's my discussion for it. The recommendation is to approve it, but...
Okay. It has to be charged from solar, is that right?
Or yes, it has, the whole key to this one is its PV and battery has to match. And so we're going to be able to build out our PV and dyno completely. But that only allows us to go up to about a megawatt of battery.
Okay.
So that's our limitations.
Yeah. That's what you're looking at, is 1 meg?
We're looking at 1 megawatt. Now, we could go smaller. We could go half a megawatt. But then on the transmission costs, they don't reduce it by half megawatt. It's always in full megawatt. So we lose that savings of transmission costs. But we still get the energy savings.
This is going to tie into the solar project we already have.
We already have, right. We're going to add and build that out.
A little bigger to be able to fully charge
the battery. Fully charge the battery, yeah.
And what's the cost of the 1 megawatt battery system?
It's going to be $2 million. $1 million we put up, $1 million the grant covers.
Gotcha.
And the solar will have to come out on top.
No, solar's part of it.
It's
all included. The rest of the solar build out and the battery's all included in the grant.
And the $2
million. Should include that.
Do you have a spreadsheet showing the cost analysis of this?
I could sure send one you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, my spreadsheet right now is on my scratch from this afternoon, but I can turn it into a spreadsheet.
what's the payout over 13 years? What does it look like? I mean, compared to other options? I still don't know.
We don't have any other options other than for this grant. It's got to be PV and battery.
That's what I want to know.
If we don't do it, and if we do do it,
yeah,
how much does it cost us, or how much does it save us?
Because the solar right now we're using, if we're doing this, we're putting the batteries, you can't do both.
Well,
you can do that.
The build out will be extra, right? Would be extra power.
Mm-hmm.
We're using part of the power that's produced already, or 100%.
Right.
So only the build out is additional power we're getting.
Correct.
Okay.
A little.
Yeah.
So y'all,
the batteries
work.
Will get used at night. When we're not when our power is...
Yeah, if we deploy it at
peak,
right,
power,
at 7 o'clock or whatever, 6 o'clock, we would deploy that megawatt.
That's one of the things we've talked about, and that's what we want. One of the things we want to experiment is, how is it best to deploy those? Is it best to deploy them during the peak when we can shave our peak? Is it best to deploy those at night when we don't have solar? Some things we have to toy with. Or in the morning.
To see how much we're saving by using the batteries and not buying the power. And if you amplify that, I just want to look at the chart, the number.
It's just going to come down to what's the price per kW of this versus the price of kW of what we'd buy.
Right. On the cost savings, I based it on $80 a megawatt. So if it went up to $90 a megawatt that we're buying, it's another $45,000 we save over 13 years. But I'll put that in a spreadsheet and have to get that to you this next week. And we need to make a decision before the 20th, which is before board meeting.
That's the meeting day.
Saving the energy that we buy from the transmission cost, it brought the million down to $300,000?
Around $300,000, yes.
It's not free.
No, it's $300,000.
So we're spending $300,000.
Over 13 years.
We didn't get anything.
We got batteries and solar.
And how much does it produce? That's the question.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right.
Is it going to produce more than $300,000 worth of power?
Will doing that help us get to where we're supposed to be by 2030 with using renewable resources?
No, it'll help, but it's not going to get us over.
Well, no, it's not going to get us there, but will it contribute to getting us there?
Yes. Yeah.
And the good thing is the panels will outlast the batteries. So if we don't, we decide not to add more batteries, then we have all the panels producing over 20, 25 years.
But in our overall portfolio, of the difference it makes, it's about 1.5 to 2%. So it's not...
My concern is you have to let them know by the 20th?
Yes.
And our next meeting is the 20th?
Mm-hmm. I have one other concern. Is that it's, like you said, it's 1.5, 2%. It's a small little... bit of the power, but we're going to have to manage it, and different groups are going to be involved in managing this little bit of power. Is it going to take away from more important things or cost us money that we could use for, you know, the same guy could do all this, or he's going to manage this 1%.
I think the management would be in the software. I think it would be programmed to...
It would probably take us a little while, or, you know, a month or 2 months, 3 months to figure out what we needed to do, and then after that, I think it would pretty much...
Yeah, the time would be in the setup, and then after that, it would...
Maybe seasonal changes at all.
But after that, I think...
Clean the panels once in a while.
Yeah.
There must be some positivity to it when you see there's a lot of power companies going to installing battery storage.
A lot of that is political, though. It may be.
There's a lot of tax incentives that they're getting to do that, too.
To do it, yeah.
And what's the present disposal cost of a facility like this?
I could try to find out. I have no idea. There's not many people disposing of them right now, right?
That's been the big question out there. There's no set way, is there?
They're not recyclable?
I don't think so. No, none of them. Even NV Energy has told us that they'll be buying more to offset the ones that aren't producing any longer. And I did ask them what they plan on doing with them.
Last I heard, they were planning on storming it on site until they found a way to dispose of them.
That's probably what will happen.
Area 51.
Okay, well, I will get a spreadsheet sent out to you guys to look at.
What do we do about the fact, though, that if it is something that we want to accept?
Can you get it approved and then cancel it?
I could, Coop, but I don't want to do that because that's... I don't think that's dealing fairly with the state. When they offer something, we take it, then we say, nah, we don't want it. I just think that looks bad on us going forward and asking for other grants.
But it's end of business on the 20th?
I need to read the letter again. I just asked for the extension last week, so they sent us the letter. I'll check
so
the time.
So if close of business is 5 p.m. and our meeting's at 3?
Well, I'm going to be out of town, too. I'll be back in Madison.
Well, you'll have plenty of time then to send an email and say we want to do it.
Yeah, you've been there, you know.
If you need to, you can schedule our meeting up a week, too, right? So
oh,
the 20th,
well,
go to...
Byron,
that's
come
a great
on.
Idea. Byron.
Come on, Byron.
That's why
Byron
gets
a big
get
mark. Crazy.
Can we approve it and then
we're good with that.
Have like a pending, like we can cancel it or something as the board reviews the email?
Well, we can prove all we want. He's worried about saying yes and then...
I know,
but we say yes now.
We approved for him to do it in 2 weeks if he doesn't hear back from us.
Contingent on
well,
the
contingent
charge
on
being pretty.
I don't do pretty ones.
Well, I don't mean that.
Yes,
economically pretty.
Okay.
That's not much
can
different
you,
than waiting to vote on it.
Yeah.
Can you write him a letter and say, hey, listen, can we have it postponed one day? Because our board meeting is at...
It was actually due in January. I asked for an extension.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh. What do you think? Is it a good deal or not?
I think what's that?
I would do it.
You wouldn't do it?
No.
I was going to say, it seems to me we're trying to spend $1 million because we got a $1 million grant.
I think others. We'll let other people test them. Let other people go through that.
So our in our discussions, and one of the reasons we brought it to the board late is we couldn't decide whether we should go for it or not. We wanted to bring it to the board and see if there was some ideas from you guys that made it.
That's the cost analysis on 13 years. And that's use the information they give you, and if it saves us money, sure. If it doesn't, then punt.
I can't believe that this is the only one that's ever going to be out there for us to go after.
I agree.
Things will be a little more.
We currently have one going in down in the Moab area, so.
And if
we can follow that.
And if the batteries only last 7 years, who looks bad?
Yeah.
Dang, Randall, I can hear.
I know you blame Randall, right?
I move that we table it, or until a later date when we have better information, and maybe there's another opportunity.
I second that motion. Motion's been made in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
They should do it.
Any opposed?
Yes.
Until they looked at me and I shook it down and said no.
Six eyes and one nay. Okay. Thank you. No. Okay. Okay, before we move on to I, I want to ask the board, does any board member feel the need to go into executive session at this time before we start on the next item?
I would like to go into executive session.
Okay. Do I have to have a quorum on that, or if anybody asks?
We all have to move to go into executive session.
I move that we go into executive session for...
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to go into executive session prior to hearing the next item. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Recorder's back on.
I'd like to call the general
meeting to order.
Yeah, I'd like to call the general meeting to order.
Or Mrs. Wood?
Ms. Byron. Byron.
Oh, that's it. He leaves when we need him. Okay, we're going on to item H. Item I. Review and possible approval to add and fill an assistant general manager position in the 2024 OPD organizational chart. Before we do go on to that, I have a little something to say. I don't know how to say it. Well, I do know how to say it. I've written it about 6 times. And I don't want to make it long because you've all waited long enough. So just, it's very difficult to pick between 3 outstanding candidates. I'm going to cry. 3 people that have shown their dedication, not only in their work, but in their commitment to Overton Power, completing all of the additional tasks that we have asked of you. It is my sincere hope that all 3 of you will continue to mentor to those behind you. You have shown us the value of mentoring and promoting from within. I encourage you all to continue to work together. It will only strengthen your OPD5. We can't say enough about all of you, but I'm going to give them an opportunity to talk because they deserve it too. The first thing we're going to do...
Make the motion.
No.
The Should first we have thing a we're... motion up right here the for you both?
Let's just do one.
I'll make a motion that
Wait.
Add to the organizational chart the position of assistant general manager, effective immediately.
Okay.
Got to put the chart up, Stephen.
Yeah.
So at this time, we're going to create the assistant general manager position on the org chart.
I second.
I would second.
Okay. So Mike motioned it.
Chad seconded it.
it's like cinnamon. And, okay. So that takes care of that part.
We'll vote.
Oh yeah, vote. All in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, second, we're going to address filling the position. Do I hear a motion for filling the position?
I move we fill the position, and I would like to... Shall we nominate somebody now?
If anybody would like to make a comment first before we do the motion, that's fine. Okay, does any of the board want to make a comment?
I just want to thank all 3 of you. Excellent people. You've been tremendous service to OPD. This has been miserable. It's been a miserable month because we are grateful for you and we appreciate you and we know you and we care about you, and this has been impossible. So just know we are grateful and we really appreciate all of you very, very much.
I would say the same thing, and that knowing each of you and working with each of you, the board's feeling is that they don't want the 2 that aren't picked, their feelings hurt because, you know, we really do care about you.
And they're all fabulous. Mm-hmm. Anybody?
Okay, I'd like to... Well,
I was going to say I thank each of you for what you've done for Overton Power, but what you've done for us is make it very difficult. That's because we have good people.
Yeah, it was amazing to have 3 people that was that well spoken, that had as good as resumes as you each did, and put the effort into the interviews you did. It was amazing. I mean, we are lucky to have such good people.
Okay, do I hear a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that we select Melissa Garcia as the new assistant general manager, effective immediately. But I also would like to thank the other candidates because...
Do that after your motion.
Yeah.
Huh? Oh. Do that after the motion.
Okay, I'll do that after
the motion. That was part of your motion.
I am the motion.
You're making a motion.
You're right. I am the motion.
Do I hear a second for the motion?
I will second that.
Okay.
Rick did.
Who did? Rick did?
Ridge.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that Melissa Garcia be the next, not be the next, be the assistant general manager of OPD. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
I abstain.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for putting up with us for so long. It's such a great company, and part of the reason it's great is because of you guys, because all of that you do. I don't know what else I can say. Just look forward to working, continuing working with all of you. Vote for me again next year. Okay.
Madam Chair, I think yes. Mike did want to say something.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
That's not part of the motion now.
Yeah, I wanted to say that it was a really tough decision because of, but also, what wonderful people we have here. And we didn't have to go outside. We have our own people that are good enough to become general manager, but we have staff that's excellent in all their fields. We have inside people who absolutely know how to run this company and do a heck of a job, and an engineering staff that makes things right and makes the new substations work, and finance that really has saved us tremendous amounts of money, and the operations that kind of goes so darn smoothly, and when we have an outage, one outage, you know, that's unplanned, my gosh, we're running a terrific organization. So we have three terrific people, and we appreciate you all, at least my idea is that it's an outside person that we need, not inside, because relationships are becoming political in this world to all of us, and money management is key too, so... I want to thank all of you. Really excellent presentation. I want to thank Mendes for developing these kind of people. Thank you, Mendes.
Any other comments from the board? item J, public comments. Anybody? Board comments?
Yeah, I do have a comment. Last week, or in the last month, I had a complaint where one of our customers who had solar complained to me that we had taken $35 from him. luckily, I met staff and met with people, and he walked away okay. But I began to think about it, why should I have $35? My goodness. And we actually got $35 for the power.
Did you tell them you're trying to raise that?
I'm looking to put a big one on my house. But I would like the staff to take a look at that policy because I see why wipe it out. Just pay them for it or either pay them for it or extend the contracts or raise the amount we're paying them. I'd like you to look at that because
So right now what we do is if they overgenerate, we let them carry it from month to month, but at the end of the year we zero it out and we refund up to $150.
No, we didn't refund anything.
This is on the new agreement, on the new policy, nothing gets
nothing. Okay.
That's the old one.
That's the old I'm one. An old guy, so that's what I wish.
And so I think we should just either reimburse them or something different. I'd like the staff to look at some possibilities because I think we ought to have happy customers personally, and having a guy think that we cheated him out of it. We didn't cheat him.
What was the $35
for? The base rate.
He paid.
No, it's credit. He generated more than he generated more kilowatt hours than he used.
From him than he took.
Okay.
And so we
because it was too close to base rate, so I'm thinking, oh, now wait a minute.
Yeah. And so we pay him at what we buy power for. We just bought the power from him, and we sold it. So I think we ought to square that away a little bit.
What did we take away from him?
The additional
generated. If you have a banked amount, come December 31st, it goes to zero.
We wipe it out.
$35.
And he had accumulated a credit of $35 because he overgenerated.
Oh, okay.
And some people overgenerate a lot more, I understand, you know, maybe $100.
But we've used that as a limit. So because if they put up more panels than we allow, then we have to refund them more money, and that's not the
business. Not if we don't allow it.
Well, that's why we don't refund them.
I would say, don't ever refund them money, but don't take away their credits because what does that hurt us?
Yeah, because he can carry it until the end of their service with
it
us.
Gets larger. That's it. It just gets bigger and bigger.
It gets larger.
And bigger.
Who cares? It doesn't cost us anything.
Anyway, I'd just like the staff to look at it and review it and make sure that it's the right kind of thing.
Start using more AC next year.
Exactly. Or it's going to rain and it's going to be cloudy and you're going to start paying $50 a month.
Yeah, maybe move the refund time to January 31st so we get another winter month in.
Okay, I have one comment, and that was it made me very happy the other day at my job to get a call from a lady in Moapa that was having some problems, and we expect customer service from customer service, but this lady called me to tell me, she had called me about a problem she was having, and then she called me back and told me that somebody from OPD, his name was Ben, so I know who it was, was so wonderful. She'd been so upset about the issues that she was having, and that he came out and explained everything to her and was so nice to her and everything. And she said, "What great customer service you guys have." And that was after complaining from the day before. So I just wanted to let you know that out in the field they do notice that too. It's not just the people that call in. I'm happy when I hear the people out in the field notice that our linemen or our meter readers or whoever are excelling at what they're doing. So, and that's it. Approval of the does anybody else have comments? Approval of the next board meeting, March 20th, unless they tell us, March 20th, 2024, 3 p.m. in the Overton boardroom.
I'll move that our next meeting be scheduled for March 20th.
Second.
Oh, okay.
What was that?
Quick. Seconded on me. Seconded right away.
That's what I thought, but it was like.
Efficient.
Okay.
I think it's done.
No more executive sessions today?
No.
Thank you. I make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to adjourn the meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Any opposed?